Jimenez says, why did we say in the first place that there are only three items? But now we say there is also a fourth item. What did the rabbi who said three have in mind in the first place? Why didn't he consider a nagging wife as being that important in that would make a person deserve not to see Gehinnom? The Gemara asks, because that rabbi says a nagging wife is no problem. Very simple solution. So that provided the solution before you got married. Solution is a get. You have a wife you cannot tolerate, you cannot stand, makes your life bitter, miserable, darkens your life, your days and nights for you. There's a simple solution. A get. Get means you tell her get. Divorce. The Gemara says, well, if the solution is so simple, why does the second rabbi include it as an item that is so valuable? Even as because of two reasons. Not always is it so easy to tell your wife to get or to give her a get. Sometimes the a person might have a ketubah, a marriage contract, where he has obligated himself to a phenomenal son. And you cannot divorce your wife without paying off that ketubah. He doesn't have the ready cash. He cannot lay his hands on as much as he'd like to, and therefore he is stuck. He's bound to her. He cannot release himself. That's why he has this nag around his neck, and he's got to live with it. Second reason is that a person might have children. When there are children, it's impossible to divorce a wife because of the fact that married life, for the sake of the children, is more important than a person's own consideration, his own well-being. That is why the Yemenah says, if you have a wife of this kind, Chas v'Shalom, what is the solution, the only solution? Accept it gladly from heaven, because your suffering is not in vain. You have a lot to look forward to later on. You know that you are being spared the ultimate in torture in Olam Haba. Not only these cases that were mentioned, not only does a person not go to Gehinnom, but he's even spared to have to look at the face, the entrance to Gehinnom. Therefore, a person should be kabel be'ahava, this kind of yisurim. Above all, in the Zohar Kadosh, of course, this is explained as one of the items where tzadikim is tzadik v'tovlo, tzadik v'ralo. There's a tzaddik in this world who is well off, tzaddik who suffers. And Asha is well off, and Asha suffers. So the Gnosh explains that to be what is considered well off, what's considered suffering. The answer is that one who has a good wife is well off. So there can be a tzaddik who's well off, and Asha is well off. The same thing with both not being well off. In either case, Benazal says too, that the reason they break a why the writing of Tanaim do they break a dish made of chinaware, cheres? Why is that broken? Benazal says to remind the person, the chatan, you're getting married, for better or for worse. Accept your marriage with ahava, with gladness, with satisfaction. We cheres this dish. The Hebrew word for it is the same as the Hebrew word for Gehinnom, Chasit, which is one of the names for the gates of Gehinnom. This is a reminder to you that if you have a wife who is bad, then think of the fact that you will not have Gehinnom. If you have a wife who is extremely good, extremely attractive, do not abuse her in any way, either with Ta'avot, Chas v'Shalom, overindulgence of Ta'avot, or hurting her because there is a Gehinnom to pay for it. That's the reason for this reminder before a wedding. In any event, the point is that a person should pray to Hashem always to be saved from going against the will of Hashem and to accept any suffering from heaven because this is always for his benefit. To live with a pure emunah, serve Hashem out of yid'ah, fear and awe and respect, and with ahava, a love for Hashem. Amen. Continuing this year, the Gemara says, one rabbi says, that when we have a machloket, a debate in the Gemara between two rabbis, we must have a final decision as to which one we should follow. Therefore, there must be a general rule that we should be informed of. This rabbi tells us that there are two rabbis that should always be followed. Whenever there is a machloket between Rabbi Akiva and any other rabbi individually, the more he is like Rabbi Akiva. If the Chachamim, the majority, argue against one rabbi, of course we follow the majority. But when we have a debate between two rabbis, if one of those two rabbis is Rabbi Akiva, Lori Meir is like him. Second, Rabbi Yossi also, if he ever argues against a rabbi, Lori Meir is like Rabbi Yossi. Third, if ever Rabbi HaKadosh argues against one rabbi, then Lori Meir is like Rabbi HaKadosh. Now we come to actual comparisons. The Gemara says, one rabbi says, that if there is a debate between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda, Lori Meir is like Rabbi Yehuda. If there is a debate between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi, what we mentioned before, then Lori Meir is like Rabbi Yossi, because it's always like Rabbi Yossi. According to this rule that we just said, that Rabbi Yehuda takes preference over Rabbi Meir, and Rabbi Yossi takes preference over Rabbi Yehuda, if there is a debate between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yossi, then Kol Shekein, the law is like Rabbi Yossi. Again, Rabbi says, if there is a debate between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon, and Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Shimon, the law is like Rabbi Yossi. Again, like Rabbi Yossi. Because if there is a debate between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon, the law is like Rabbi Yehuda. And since Rabbi Yossi takes preference over Rabbi Yehuda, then he surely takes preference over Rabbi Shimon. So we have, it seems, we have two, strangely, very strangely, those two, who were the prime students of Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Shimon, always, the Lori Meir is not like them. When they argue against Rabbi Yehuda or Rabbi Yossi, the Lori Meir is not like Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Shimon. This is a statement in the Gemara. Now the Gemara attacks the statement. Rav Mishanashia says, we do not accept this as a general rule. Proof is, we find certain cases where Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Yehuda argue, and after this argument, later rabbis, Rav, says, the law remains like Rabbi Shimon. So we see this is not a general accepted rule. Yehuda says, perhaps this is just this exceptional case you brought, where Rav said this is an exception to that rule. The Gemara goes further to bring other cases, other instances, and the Gemara sort of refutes them. Finally, the Gemara says, let us take a case between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi. The question arises, a kohen is considered pure, tahor. He is never allowed to bring himself to a place of tum'ah where he can become tame. Therefore, chutz la'aretz, outside of Eretz Yisrael, is called Eretz Ha'amim or Eretz Ha'tum'ah. A kohen living in Eretz Yisrael is forbidden to leave Eretz Yisrael, to go to outside of Eretz Yisrael where it's tame. The air is tame. But Yisrael who does that is doing something wrong. But a Yisrael does not have a restriction saying he cannot become tame. The kohen has an absolute rule that he must remain pure, tahor. So the kohen cannot leave Eretz Yisrael to go to Chutz La'aretz except for two reasons. One, if he has a potential bride, if he has a chance to obtain a shidduch outside of Eretz Yisrael, that mitzvah is so great that he is permitted to leave Eretz Yisrael to go to Chutz La'aretz to get married, to obtain a wife. Second case, which the restriction is lifted is he wants to go to study Torah. He finds that he does not have, he finds he can learn Torah in Chutz La'aretz. Then he is permitted to go to Chutz La'aretz outside of Eretz to study Torah. But here we have the debate. If Yudah says, when do we say that he's allowed to leave Eretz Yisrael to study Torah in Chutz La'aretz? Only if he cannot find a rabbi in Eretz Yisrael. Only then is he permitted to leave Eretz Yisrael. But if he can find a place, a yeshiva, a rabbi to study Torah in Eretz Yisrael, it is forbidden for him to leave Eretz Yisrael to become Tameh, though he is going to study Torah. Rabbi Yossi argues this point, and he says that even if he does, if there are rabbis in Eretz Yisrael where he could learn Torah, still, he is permitted to leave because not all rabbis are alike. Every rabbi is different. One person is zocheh to learn from one rabbi better. A different one finds that he has more hatzlacha, more success learning from a second rabbi. But if this person finds that he can have more success by the rabbi in Chutz La'aretz more than the one in Eretz Yisrael, he may leave Eretz Yisrael to study Torah by this rabbi in Chutz La'aretz. Rabbi Yossi says an actual case of one Kohen who left Eretz Yisrael because his rabbi lived outside of Eretz Yisrael. He went there to study Torah. So therefore, a Kohen can leave Eretz Yisrael to study Torah, though there are rabbis in Eretz Yisrael. If he feels he can achieve more outside, he may go. This is the debate. But the Gemara says, Rabbi Yochanan said, in this case, the law remains like Rabbi Yossi, which means that he is allowed to leave Eretz Yisrael. Now the question is, if we have already determined a general rule that in all debates between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi, the law remains like Rabbi Yossi, why does Rabbi Yochanan tell us here the law remains like Rabbi Yossi? We already know it from this general rule. Therefore, it is proof that it is not a general rule. We must have a decision in every debate. Gemara says, finally, though we can refute this proof, final word of the Gemara is that this general rule is not acceptable by all. Why? Because we find that Rav does not consider this as a general rule. Rav says, always, the law remains like Rabbi Shimon, against the others, against the Yudah, against the Yossi. This is the final word of the Gemara, because Rav says so. Therefore, it is not a generally accepted rule. And it's noteworthy to observe the names that are mentioned here. The Gemara makes this statement as a general rule, but then the Gemara concludes at the point that Rav does not accept this general rule. Notice that Rav is the one who was the main, most important student of Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai Zal. Therefore, his loyalty, devotion is so great that he said, I will under no conditions, under no circumstances, accept a rule like this, which says the law does not remain like Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai Zal. And since part of that general rule is broken, it means that the general rule does not hold out. Rav, too, is the one who said, according to the Girsa of Rashi Akadosh, she mentioned, that the reason I am sharper than all my friends is because I was zocheh to see Rabbi Meir once for the back. These are the two where the Gemara says the law does not remain like them. But Rav, because he learned from both of them, says that the law is not like them. First one to make this statement was Rav Mesharshia. Rav Mesharshia is a name that is mentioned times. There are a number of times in Shas where we find that name. And yet it seems to be a unique name. It would seem, to take this in a sort of a lighter vein, if we can permit ourselves, that Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai Zal in the Zohar Kadosh and his students were compared to the menorah. The central candle of the menorah burned directly upwards towards heaven. The three candles on each side burned at an angle towards the central candle, facing the central candle. The Zohar Kodosh says that just as the menorah in the Holy Temple, so was Rabbi Shmuel ben Yochai Zal, the central candle. The three students on each side, the six students, turned to him for the light. Just as the Shabbat is the center of the week, that is, the 3 days preceding it, the 3 days following it are called according to the Shabbat. The weekdays depend upon the Shabbat. So too is Rabbi Shmuel ben Yochai Zal the Shabbat for his students. These six students were the main ones, the ones that remained for the Idra Zuta. There were, of course, three more students in the first Idra, Idra Rabba. The first Idra that Yeshua Chayazal taught their students when they assembled in the special Idra, that means a gathering place. There were other students too, and two of them were the Stalek. The ones that remained, finally, the main students, were these six. And these six, if we take their names and combine them, they are the Bei Yeshiva Avraham Yishmael Meichai Zal. Take their names, combine them in Gematria, you have Rav Mishar Shia. Which means that, sort of secretly, this was the combination of all the students who rose up to defend the power of Rabbi Shmuel ben Yochai Zal. Is said, we cannot accept a rule which says the law does not remain like Rabbi Shmuel ben Yochai Zal. Especially, singularly, individually, Rav came out and said, we reject this absolutely. We do not accept a rule like this, because no one can determine final law better than Rabbi Shmuel ben Yochai Zal. Yibaya says, to compare the first, the earlier rabbis of the Gemara to the rabbis of later generations, we find statements made by the later rabbis. Interestingly, the way they make these comparisons. Rabbi Yochanan said that the heart of the Rishonim, that means the first rabbis of the Gemara, like Rabbi Akiva, his generation, Mata that he showed him was open, broad, wide, like the opening of the Ulev, that means the hall leading to the Echal in the Beit HaMikdash. The opening there was 40 amot high, 20 amot wide. It means a very, very wide opening. So wide was their heart, meaning their understanding, their wisdom, they had so much deeper, more all-encompassing wisdom than the later rabbis. How do we compare the later rabbis to them? The heart of the later rabbis, Rabbi Yochanan said, like Rabbi Elazar ben Shavua, was comparable to the opening of the Hechal, which was only 20 amot high, 10 amot wide. Means the heart became smaller. There was less room and there was less wisdom in the later rabbis. Rabbi Yochanan said, that's the later rabbis. We, about himself, he said, we are like the opening of a needle compared to the former rabbis. Our heart, our mind is so tiny in comparison to them. Our wisdom is so minute. The next generation, Abaye said, we, in learning Gemara, are like trying to put a nail through a wall. Now, it's very difficult to put pressure and get this nail through. It goes in with the utmost difficulty. You got to force it. You have to use a hammer on it. This is how, in order for us to understand, it doesn't flow through like an open door. It's got to be pushed into us, and we understand with difficulty. Rav said, when it comes to svara, depth and understanding, we are like a finger trying to go through hard wax. It cannot penetrate. It just sticks to it a little. That's how our understanding is so tiny comparison to the former ones. The last rabbi to get Rav Ashi, said, we are like putting a finger, not to a wall, putting a finger into an open pit, an open ditch, goes very easily. That's not our learning. That's our power of shikha, our forgetting. We are so quick in forgetting that when we finish one Gemara and we start the second Gemara, we have already forgotten the one we just finished. That's how quickly we forget. This is what Ashi said. Then the Gemara says, again, for the sake of comparison, comparing the first rabbis to the later ones, one rabbi said, if the first rabbis would be called malachim, angels, then we have to consider ourselves humans in comparison. Just as a human is nothing compared to an angel, if they are angels, we are humans. If we consider the first rabbis humans, people, then we are like mules, donkeys in comparison, dumb animals. But not like the mule of the great Tzadikim, the Michalina Mendoza, the Mitrechas Ben Yair, who had special heavenly powers. We are like ordinary mules in comparison to them. This is the ratio between the first rabbis and the later rabbis of the Gemara. And of course, this must be multiplied infinitely to what the generations have reached in our time. It goes without saying. But let's take this in a little deeper vein. Finish him explain. Birchner said, the heart of the first rabbis is like the opening of the ulam, the hall, very tall and very wide. Later rabbis are like the opening of the hechal, half the height, half the width. Question is, we find in Tehillim that King David said, Mizikenim et bonet, which means, from the elders at Bunan, I gain wisdom. And Midrash says, translation is, I gain wisdom more than the elders. I have more wisdom than the elders. How can that be? The elders means the former generation. If generations become smaller, how can he say that I gain more wisdom than the ones before me? The answer we can see from this mashal that the Gemara gives. The former rabbis, the elders, were like the opening of the Bulan. Later ones, like the opening of the Hechal. There's a big difference between them. Because the Hechal, though it is smaller, the opening, but it is much holier. It's deeper into, it's right where the Aron is, the Aron Kodesh, tablets are. Whereas the Ulam is at a distance. So that means that the opening may be smaller, but there's a greater depth. You reach a further point. Reason is, this is what King David meant. Nature is that a giant who is very tall can see a very far distance. His sight can reach a far distance because he towers over any obstacles blocking the vision. A small person, a child or a pygmy, cannot see far at all. Things block him. But if the giant would place this child on top of his head or on his shoulders, this child or pygmy or midget could see further even than the giant, if he's on top of this giant. So too, the case of the ulam. The ulam is very big. That's the first rabbis. They're very big and very great. They can see far. We, of course, cannot compare to them. But we who have received from them, Ms. Kenin et Bonan, from these elders we have learned, we have studied their Torah, that now they take us and place us upon their knowledge. With their knowledge in our grasp, we can now see further. So we can reach with our eyes, our vision, to the point of the Heichal itself. Another point is that the Heichal, though it is a smaller opening, it is still higher because the Beit HaMikdash was built on a mountain. To get to the Kodesh Kadeshim, you have to keep climbing upwards. So even though the Ulan is taller, 40 amot high, the Heichal is much lower in height. Yet, in actual level, the Heichal was higher than the Ulan, because it's up to the top of the mountain. That's where the Kodesh, the Holy of Holies, is. So that with the assistance of this giant, of these giant meaning these great rabbis of the past, with their assistance, we can reach up to the Heichal itself, which is on a higher level than the Ulan. Therefore, this is what King David meant when he said, "From the elders I learned," meaning I will learn more than the elders. If I learn from the elders, if I accept their teachings, if I study their teachings, then I can know even more than them. Then I can surpass them. Because with their assistance, with their knowledge, I can then add by studying all the others. And that's why the rule is that the later rabbis have the power to determine the decision in the debates of their former rabbis. How could a later rabbi come and say, "I say the Lord remains like this great rabbi in the Gemara"? How can he speak against the other one? The answer is that he now has the power of both. He has studied both. He's given that authority above them to be able to decide which one of them to follow. Still, the wording of the Gemara, of course, is one of the highest kavod, the respect for the former rabbis. How then could the Gemara say, be in doubt about the former rabbis, when they said, if the first ones were like angels, we are like humans. If they are like humans, we are like mules. The Gemara is in doubt as to what they are, has to show. Actually, they're like angels. They're greater than angels. Why does the Gemara make this statement as though it was a question of doubt? Yes, there is. That's what Yaakov says. Beautiful explanation of this word. He says, the first rabbis, of course, are like angels. It depends upon us. If we appreciate them, if we appraise them properly. Therefore, what he said is, if we say they are like angels, then we are humans. Then we are people. But if we say they are people, we are only mules. We're dumb animals to make a statement like that. Because unquestionably, first rabbis were Kodesh, Kadeshim, heavenly like Malachim. This is the true status of the former rabbis. Speaking of the Tanaim, one of the Tanaim was Rabbi Yehoshua ben Hananya, one of the group of rabbis, one of the students of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, who was called the Hakima de Yehudai, the wisest of all the rabbis then, cleverest. He was the one who went into debate with the 60 wise men, the philosophers in Athens, the Greek philosophers, and in the deepest debate, he defeated every one of them. He never lost a battle in his life. He was never outwitted, except Yeshua ben Hananya himself made this statement. For all my life, no person ever outwitted me in an argument, except three cases. Who were these three cases? Not great Tanaim, not great rabbis at that time. Three cases. One was a woman. The second was a small boy. Third was a small girl. Only these three people in my lifetime outwitted me. Case of the woman was, Yeshua said, one time I stopped off at an inn where this woman was a caretaker, and she made me a pot of soup, vegetable soup, and I ate this soup. I left nothing over on the plate. I finished it completely. Second meal, again, she gave me this plate, and I finished it. Third time, she deliberately put in too much salt without my knowledge. When I tasted it, it was inedible. So I pulled my hand back and I pushed the plate aside. Then she said to me, "Rebbe, why did you draw your hand back? Why don't you eat this plate of soup?" I told her, "I'm sorry, I already ate before. I'm not hungry." So she said to me, "If you already ate, how come you didn't draw your hand back from the bread? How come you ate the bread at this meal?" She said, "Rebbe, perhaps it's because your reason is that you did not leave over pe'ah, which means leave over a portion. Never finish a plate completely. Leave over a portion of the plate. Perhaps you are now leaving over pe'ah because you forgot to leave over, because you want to leave over to cover the other plates that you had. Because didn't the rabbis teach us that a person must leave over pe'ah in a plate, which belongs to, which means before you start eating it, put a little aside, and that belongs to the shemesh, the servant, the one who serves. This is pe'ah, it's like giving charity to the poor. Well, this goes to the shemesh who serves the courses. And that's perhaps why you did it." Very politely telling him this, he said, "This is one time I was outwitted by this woman." Second case, he said, was this small girl. I was walking along a path in a field. This was a private field. Walking along this path, the small girl said to me, "Remy, isn't this a field? Meaning, isn't this private property? Why do you walk here?" I said to her, "Am I not walking on a trodden path? It's a regular road." So she said to me, "Of course this is a trodden path. What made it trodden? What made this path so well walked upon? People like you, illegal actions like yours, did it. That's why this is a path. People going through a private field, enough of them going through becomes a path. You are helping in making this a settled path." Again, Yeshua said, "I was outwitted." Third case, he said, was with a small boy. When he came to a road at a crossroads, and he saw a small boy sitting there, and he asked this boy, "Which is the proper road to take to get to the city?" The boy said, "Well, this one is long but short. The other one is short but long." So, Yeshua decided, he went down the road that was short but long. As long as it's short, you might as well take that road. It was very short. When he came to the city, he found that the road came to a dead end. There were gardens, orchards in front of it, where he couldn't get through to the entrance to the city. He came back. Yeshua told, "I returned." I said to this child, "My son, didn't you tell me that this is the short road?" The boy said, "Rebbe, didn't I also tell you this is short but long? Clearly short to the city, but it's long because you've got to come back and take the other road." Rebbe Yeshua said, "I kissed this child on the forehead, and I said to him, Ashrechem, fortunate are you, Jewish people, that all of you are wise, smallest to the greatest, the greatest to the smallest." Now, of course, the question, of course, is obvious. Rabbi Yeshua heard this child say, "This road is short but long. This one is long but short." Why did he make that decision? Why did he take the one that's short but long? He heard the word but long. Now, when there's a but in it, you've got to, or short and long, you've got to be careful about the other part of the sentence. The answer is that there is actually a machloket in the Gemara. If you have a statement with two parts to it, and both parts seem to conflict, Which part should you accept as the what to follow? First half or the second half? And the machloket, whether debate whether you accept the first or the second, of Yeshua held, the first one says, sure, to accept the first part. The boy said, I hold, we hold, we accept the last part. If you'd follow the way we hold, you wouldn't have had to walk so far. You follow the way you hold, and therefore you had to walk far. Which means that if you heard such a statement, you should have at least inquired as to how I hold. At least that much. Therefore, Yeshua said this was one of the three times that I was outwitted by a small child. The Yemenis says that Rabbi Meir had a wife whose name was Bruria. Bruria was so wise, so clever, so learned in Torah, that the rabbis of the Gemara used to come to her to learn wisdom, to learn Torah. She had more knowledge of Torah, a broader knowledge of most of the rabbis of the Gemara of it. She, of course, was the daughter of Rabbi Hanina ben Tradion, one of the 10 rabbis who was killed by the Roman king. He is the one that died when they tied a Sefer Torah to him. They set fire to him and the Sefer Torah together. At one time, Rabbi Yossi Agalili was walking along a road, and he met Bruria, the wife of Rabbi Meir. And he asked her one question. He said, which road shall I take to the city of Lut? Very short, concise. The minister says that Bruria replied, you fool. Didn't the rabbis, Pirkei Avot, teach us, do not speak much to women. Al tarbe sicha im ha'isha. Do not speak at length to a woman. This is speaking at length to a woman. He was shocked. All I asked was, which road shall we take to the city of Lud? Is that a long discussion with a woman? She said, you should have said, which one to Lud? That's enough. Every additional word is breaking this rule. So sharp was she. The Yemenis says that Bruria once found one of the students of Rabbi Meir studying Torah silently, without emitting sounds, without saying the words of the Yemenis clearly. And she kicked him. She said to him, doesn't the Torah say that if you study Torah and you bring out the words clearly, then the Torah remains with you. But if you study the Torah silently, you will forget it. Pasuk says, Ki chayim heim lemotzeihem, lemotzeihem. Torah is life to those who find it. The Gemara translates this to mean, lemotzeihem. Torah is life, which means it exists, remains with one who brings it out with his mouth, who speaks the words of Torah. Therefore, that Shmuel said to Rav Yehuda, student, Shinnai said, you sharp mind, you're a very sharp mind, and I teach you this lesson. You study Torah, open your mouth, in order that your Torah will have, you will have long life, the Torah will exist with you. Why did he say this statement? He was always called Shinnai, sharp mind. Why did he say it here specifically, the word Shinnah? Because we know that usually these are two opposite factors, two great qualities. Either a person is a sharp mind, very sharp, he's blessed with that, or a person is blessed with a retentive memory, very good memory. We say that they're called Sinai and Oked Harim. A mind that is like Mount Sinai, it contains a lot, remembers a lot, or a kid had a means that has the sharpness that it can tear up mountains, uproot mountains. You very rarely find a person who's blessed with both, sharp mind plus a retentive memory. So Shmuel said to Rav Yehuda, you are a sharp mind, a harif. advise you to assist you becoming a Sinite too, also one who remembers a lot. The key to memory is to speak the words of Torah out. Do not read without moving your lips. Do not read without emitting a sound. You must say the words of Torah in order to remember them. The Rebbe tells us that Rabbi Elazar had a student who studied Torah silently, and after 3 years, he forgot his entire learning because he studied it silently. The Rebbe says, too, that there was once a student of Rabbi Elazar who committed a sin where he was supposed to get the death penalty. And in heaven, that means a death penalty from heaven. In heaven, his case came up before the heavenly court because this had to be signed and sealed in heaven. The heavenly court decided, let him be. Free him from this death penalty because he was zoche to serve so great a tzaddik. Is serving this tzaddik is enough of a mitzvah to save him from death. Now, we take that a little bit deeper. Let's take the case of Yehoshua, Moshe Rabbeinu. The Rebbe tells us that any student who states a law, a halacha, in front of his rabbi, penalty is death. Yehoshua, we learned, said in front of Moshe Rabbeinu a law, and therefore he was sentenced to death. But the Torah tells us, the Gemara tells us, that there are certain things that are equivalent to death. A person who's blind, a person who's extremely poor, a person who's a leper, leprosy, and a person who has no children. Therefore, Yeshua received the penalty of having no children. He never had any sons. This we learned. Yet the question arises, what is the reason why the penalty was not to have children, not to have sons? And what is the difference between penalty of death and not having sons? Are they both actually alike, completely alike? And if they are not, then how did he escape death? The answer is, of course they are not alike. Having no sons is similar to death. All these are like death, but they are still not death itself. Between the two, naturally, between these two penalties, naturally death is worse. Because a person who still remains alive, he's like a dead person, but he is still physically alive and can still perform more mitzvot. So there is a difference. So that means that Yehoshua actually escaped the death penalty. Why did he escape the death penalty? He had to get it as a law, a rule. He did to state a law in front of Moshe Rabbeinu. How did he come to escape the death penalty? This we find in that pasuk itself. It says that Yehoshua said this law, Adoni Moshe Kelaim. He stated this law. But that pasuk says, Vayomer Yehoshua, and Yehoshua Bisharet Moshe, the one who served Moshe Rabbeinu, said this law. Why does the Torah in that instance include these words? Yehoshua, the one who served Moshe Rabbeinu, made this statement to teach us that this is why, though he said a law in front of Moshe Rabbeinu, still his life was spared. He got a penalty similar to it, but his life was spared because he did serve Moshe Rabbeinu throughout. Therefore, the Gemara says, "Gedola shimusha yoter milimuda." Greater is the serving one who studies Torah than learning Torah, because learning can be forgotten. Serving Torah is something that remains forever, the highest zechut possible, higher than the study of Torah itself.